Welcome to GW Healthcast. Joining us today is Dr. Keith Melanson. He's a professor of surgery at the George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences, the chief of the Transplant Institute and Division of Transplant Surgery, and the medical director of the GW Ron and Joy Paul Kidney Center at the George Washington University Hospital. And he is here to discuss transplanting between different blood types, desensitization, hepatitis C transplants, and kidney pumps.
I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Wilner. Welcome, Dr. Melanson.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. To get started, let's just start at the beginning. Why would someone need a liver or kidney transplant in the first place?
Very good question. So people who need organ transplants are people that have a failure of a specific system inside of their body. So for a liver transplant, what has to occur is that just that part of their body is not functioning well. The patients are otherwise reasonably healthy, or at least healthy enough to go through a major operation, i.e. liver transplantation. So the types of people who need liver transplants, their organ has been damaged. It could be damaged as a result of hepatitis, some sort of viral infection, or some sort of reaction to medication. It could be due to them injuring their liver with the use of drugs or alcohol. And it could be some environmental agent that we're not sure how the injury occurred. But if they have a very specific injury to their liver, they would be diagnosed as having liver disease by doctors in their community, because it's pretty universal how to diagnose liver disease. It's going to be through a series of blood tests and things of that nature that the doctors in the community would pick up. And those are the types of patients that are sent to us for more extensive workups for liver transplantation. For kidney transplantation, in a similar way, patients have kidney disease primarily for one of three reasons. Number one, they have long-standing diabetes, high blood pressure. Obesity can also be a problem, actually, for liver and kidney transplantation. Obesity is one of the number one causes of both liver and kidney failure. The other issue with kidney transplant is that other than these top reasons, diabetes, high blood pressure, and obesity, you could have some sort of inherited problem that caused you to have kidney disease. Once you have kidney disease, which again is routinely diagnosed by community physicians, you may need to start dialysis. Unlike in liver disease, if you have liver failure, there's really no other treatment other than liver transplantation. In kidney failure, there is a bridge to transplantation, which is called dialysis, and that's either hemodialysis or peritoneal dialysis. Patients can be on dialysis for a period of time and then receive a kidney transplant. But the answer to your question, who needs these sort of life-saving procedures? It's patients that will have failure of an organ system. And in liver and kidney transplant, it's failure of the liver system or the kidney system inside of their body.
Okay, great. Now, give me an idea of the scope. For example, how many liver transplants or kidney transplants do you do in a year at George Washington University Hospital?
Okay, so with liver transplant, we have just started the program. So although all of us who are here, all of the physicians, there are eight of us that are here, we came from programs where we did an average of about 100, 150 liver transplants per year. We are just starting the liver program at George Washington, and the first liver transplant, we believe, will be done this month, the month of March. We're getting the first patient ready as we speak. So we're just starting the liver program. However, the kidney transplant program has been around and functional since 2015, and we are currently doing approximately 80 to 100 kidney transplants per year, and those are split almost down the middle between live donor kidney transplants and deceased donor kidney transplants.
I understand there's always a shortage of organs. Say if you do 100 kidney transplants a year, how many patients are actually waiting?
It's a great question. So that's the big problem in organ transplantation. is that we don't have enough donors for the amount of recipients that we have. Now, in the organ transplant business, we're a victim of our own success because organ transplantation has been so successful, where approximately 90% of the people that get transplanted will be alive 1 year after transplantation. That's phenomenal, particularly when you compare that to the beginning of organ transplantation in the 1960s. So we have been very successful, but the problem is we just don't have enough organs. As an example, we do about 30,000 transplants per year, usually about 25,000. However, there are over 100,000 people on the waiting list. So we're only transplanting about a fourth of the waiting list every year. So unfortunately, most of the people that need a transplant to stay alive will not be able to receive that transplant because there are not enough organs. Now, what are the options? The options for people that need the transplant and are waiting and they would not receive it if they had to wait for a standard, what's called deceased donor transplant, meaning someone that dies and then you get their organs, can cut to the front of the line if they have a donor. This is true for liver transplantation as well as kidney transplantation. So if you need a kidney and you wait would be 5 to 6 years for you to receive a deceased donor, if your brother decides to donate his kidney to you, you can immediately get a transplant. Same thing for a liver transplant. So this is a way for someone to cut the line. But the overarching problem is that we don't have nearly enough transplants for the people on the list. And that's why you will hear that statistic that 17 people die waiting for an organ transplant every day.
Whoa. Okay. I heard something about growing organs, you know, in a petri dish. Any progress with artificial organs?
Actually, yes. There is lots of progress that have been made within, I would just say, the last 5 years of taking stem cells and utilizing these scaffolds, usually made with cellulose, to try to recreate the architecture of an organ for transplantation. The most progress that has been made currently is with remaking a bladder, a urinary bladder, or a portion of a kidney for a transplant. That has already been done successfully. However, not an entire complex solid organ like a kidney or a liver. That has not been done. However, just recently, you may have seen in the news that we have been able to successfully do what's called xenotransplant. And xenotransplant means that you are getting an organ from an animal, usually a pig, usually a genetically modified pig. So these specially genetically engineered pigs who have organs that are partially human, we are taking those organs and transplanting them into humans. That has recently been done successfully with kidney transplants at two different institutions and just recently with a heart transplant. The patient with the heart transplant is still alive months after transplantation at the University of Maryland. So I think this is really the future, the immediate future, being able to genetically modify these animals and then utilize these partially human organs for transplantation.
I guess the other way of expanding the population of potential organs is I understand that some organs that even though they're not perfect, like livers that have hepatitis, can still be used. Is that right?
That is true. We have been vastly expanding the type of organs that we utilize for years, utilizing older and older donors and utilizing compromised organs and causing them to be rehabilitated in some way. For hearts, there are pumps for organs. We currently will pump hearts and lungs and kidneys on these special apparati that are utilized to make the organs work better than they did even inside of the donor. And we are starting to do the same thing with livers. We manage patients, so patients that are at the end of life that are going to be donors, we do things and give them special medicines at the time of their death to try to rehabilitate their organs prior to transplantation. And you mentioned hepatitis C. now that we have medications that really treat and cure hepatitis C, we can take people that have hepatitis C and then give the medicines to our recipients, and they never get hepatitis C. So you can utilize those organs. All of these efforts have expanded the donor pool and have made the waiting list a little shorter.
Now, once the surgery is done, the old organs removed, organs put in, and it works, everything's good, is there still a need for a lifelong immunosuppression?
Yes. One of the most important things that we do with our patients before we allow them to receive life-saving transplant surgery is we go through in excruciating detail the fact that they will need very careful follow-up and that they will be on these life-sustaining medications for the rest of their lives. So it's imperative that the patients understand that they have to come to many doctor's appointments and they have to take their medicines in a cocktail every day, usually twice or three times a day. And although the number of medications decrease over time, the compliance of the patients with the medication and with the follow-up that is done in the doctor's office is of the utmost importance. And again, that's why with our social workers and other ancillary personnel, we're making sure that the patients have to understand this very much so, and their families as well, because it really takes a committed network of people to have a person be a successful organ transplant recipient.
Dr. Melanson, I learned a lot in the last 10 minutes, and I want to thank you. And thanks for this great discussion of approaches to liver and kidney transplantation.
Thanks again, Andrew, and it's my pleasure to be here because I think this is very important information to impart upon our patient population.
Thank you for joining us on GW HealthCast. To schedule an appointment, please call 1-888-GW-DOCS. Or visit gwhospital.com for more information or to get connected with one of our providers. Please also remember to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast and all the other fascinating podcasts from the George Washington University Hospital Library. Physicians are independent practitioners who are not employees or agents of the George Washington University Hospital. The hospital shall not be liable for actions or treatments provided by physicians. Individual results may vary. There are risks associated with any procedure. Speak with your physician about these risks to find out if surgical procedures are right for you.